Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Welcome to Season 2 of the 147 Podcast with me, Sports MC Phil Seymour, and him, the reigning Players and Tour Champion and former Champion of the World, the magician, Sean Murphy.
And it's fair to say, I am an ever so slightly croaky Phil Seymour today. The shootout at the weekend broke me, Sean.
Well, yeah. Hi, Phil. Hi, everybody. I was chatting to someone and saying that it's actually probably more work for you than anyone else, isn't the shootout? Because you introduce every single match.
Yeah, I walked
an incredible amount of work.
Oh, I walked an average of 11 miles a day over the 4 days of the shootout in brogues, by the way. So my feet are literally hanging off right now. It's not nice. Yeah, he's not.
Nobody needs to think about
no,
that.
No, they don't. No.
Merry Christmas, everybody.
Yeah, Phil's feet. Yeah, it's mad. It really is mad. I mean, on a normal day at the snooker, so I'm Scottish Open later this week, I think my busiest day is the quarterfinals, which I announced two games in the afternoon, one after the other, and then two games in the evening, which run alongside each other. So there's sort of three match announcements. At the shootout, there's 32 matches each day, apart from the final day where there's only 31. And it's just nuts. It's brilliant, but goodness me, yeah, it really is. I will say it, I'm not the cold face, but it is hard work. It's as hard a work as I like to get involved in anyway.
Absolutely, yeah. It is great though, isn't it? It's wacky, and it was great to see... I think first, if we're going to jump straight into the shootout, I think first thing we have to say is that like the venue was absolutely phenomenal for everyone who was lucky enough to go. Like, I'm sure they'll agree. I thought the venue was one of the best venues I've ever played in.
The venue,
my whole career as a snooker player, I thought it was phenomenal.
But anyone that doesn't know, Swansea Arena is literally brand new. I mean, they've had like a few events there over the last couple of months. I think it was the first live TV that's been there. The staff were brilliant. The building is brilliant. It's a weird design from the outside, but it's also quite cool, actually. But then the venue itself inside is tremendous. Absolutely fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, go back to what I always say, which is when you play snooker in venues that are designed for performances, they're just superior immediately. Even like the back room setup was great. We had all the lounges, players' areas, practice facilities, dressing rooms, you know, all of that stuff, which you don't really think about until they're not there.
Yep.
It was brilliant. Absolutely fantastic. And great to see, obviously I'd gone out by then, but it was great to see as the week went on, as the tournament progressed, it did fill up. And by the last day, it looked like there was a great crowd in.
Oh, the Saturday was complete carnage. I mean, it was in a good way. It was brilliant. The atmosphere in there on Saturday was tremendous. Earlier in the week, yeah, it was a little bit quiet, but it's weekdays, isn't it? And I think weekdays... Forget the Masters, okay? Forget the Crucible, because they're always going to be busy, okay? But weekdays in most tournaments are kind of quiet. They were kind of quiet, but the atmosphere was actually still really good. I know when Willow came out, when Mark Williams came out, and everyone, the whole place stood up, and the roar when he walked out was amazing. Absolutely incredible. And I think he went on social media and said he was going to make this his last shootout, but if it's back at Swansea next year, he's not going to miss out on that roar. He doesn't want to miss out on that, so he probably would do it again. It was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. There was little touches, like the balcony into the arena off the players' lounge, so the players could come out. And that was where, I mean, you did all right in your first round match. I came out and actually watched you off that balcony there. And as you progressed on, that balcony got more full and more full, and it was just rammed. By the end of it, that balcony was completely chocker with people. It was the venue was just spot on. Really, really hope they go back there, whether it's with the shootout or with a different event. Great venue. The snooker fans down in South Wales as well really embraced it. Thank you to everyone that came up to me and mentioned the podcast, because there was quite a few people that did actually, which was really lovely to hear. It was fantastic. So go on, let's talk about your first round match. Let's get it out of the way. Let's get it done, shall we, Sean?
Well, I'm assuming the balcony isn't where that numpty was sat who shouted out, "Don't bottle it now," on the blue.
What about the
I'm assuming that wasn't you.
What about the numpty that after, was it red number 9 or red number 10, stood up from the table and went, "Is anyone else nervous or is it just me?" I've never seen that during a maximum. Congratulations, Sean, on the maximum.
Thanks. Yeah, it was an incredible moment. I remember being part of the team that sort of put the shootout through its paces in the very early days moment of conception, and we were chatting about it. And I don't think even back in the day, I don't think we even thought we'd see a century break, you know. And I think there's been 20 something centuries over the years the shootout's been going, so not many at all. The thoughts of a century were rare, but the 147 was just like, you were bonkers to even suggest it. But I still can't really believe it's happened, to be completely honest, because I haven't been playing great in recent weeks. My form hasn't been that good. And it just, you know, it came out of nowhere. So I was as surprised as anybody.
It was brilliant. We never thought that would happen. It's funny, I was with the Matchroom production guys in the back in the morning, and we all had a little guess as to what the highest break of the session would be. It was just strange. That was the only session of the week I was there, and we did that, but we did. I think I said 104, to which two other people then went 103 and 105. Yeah, thanks a lot. Cheers for that. No one would ever have said 147. And talking to like the WST media team, they never, ever in a million years thought there'd be a Maxi at the shootout. No chance. Because in those conditions, we talk about conditions a lot, but with people shouting out, when you're potting the yellow and they're going, "Ooh," you would not expect. It was just crazy, completely crazy. But again, the atmosphere in there, when that black went in at the end, or when the blue went in even, oh, it was fantastic. How did you cope with that when the guy shouted out on the blue? I mean, come on. That was... But what was it? What did he shout? "Don't bottle it now, Sean," I think, wasn't it?
"Don't bottle it now." It was quite funny because it was the same bloke who shouted out. When I won the lag at the start of the frame, the same man shouted out, "It's good to see you won something for... You haven't won anything for ages," or something like that. Thought it was my brother.
Brilliant. He was probably applauding in the second round, though.
Things have been back to normal since then. But I think I said it in the studio with Rachel and the team, and I suppose it's true, is that, for those of us lucky enough to get employed to do them, like the shows that we do between events and clubs and places up and down the country, exhibitions and stuff, they're usually to quite raucous crowds. And I think you get used to, you sort of learn how to handle them. You know, you have to embrace it and go with it. People have paid their money, bought their ticket, and come to watch you entertain them. So you do learn the ropes. It's a bit like you with your MC work. I'm sure crowds are different. You know, the snooker crowd and the boxing crowd are different. The darts crowd will be something else. And to some degree, you've got to embrace them. If you try to manhandle them and make them go your way, you know, it kind of can sometimes backfire on you. So you've got to go with them and play to the crowd a little bit. And I think doing the shows helps you learn how to do that. But yeah, when someone shouts out, "Don't bottle it," when you're absolutely twitching, it doesn't help it at all. No, but it was great. And the shootout was a great event. I thought it was a roaring success. And just whisper it. Don't tell anybody this. Cause I know my opinions do tend to get inflated sometimes. I actually really like the shootout. I wish there were more tournaments like that.
Do you know, I can't think who the player was that I was talking to. I was chatting to one of the players. I can't for the life of me think who it was. But they said to me, they said, "We need more of these. We need more of these. We need more shootouts." Whether it's a home nations of shootouts, and we have one in Northern Ireland, one in Scotland, one in Wales, one in England, and then maybe a Champions Night, something like that. Like a slightly smaller, trimmed down version of what was the Premier League. It still annoys me that certain players, certain big names refuse to play in it. I think it's a very good window for the sport. I think it's like T20 in cricket and that kind of thing. I do think it could help to propel the sport forward. I think if the big names played in it as well, it would elevate it even further. I think that is a pity. All of that aside, you're right. What a brilliant event it was. It was fantastic. Just touching on what you said as well, just for anyone going to the Scottish Open this week, there won't be any Mexican waves. Okay. So yeah, it's a very different event for me as well as it is for
definitely,
the players.
Definitely not for me anyway. I'm already out of the tournament, so I've already been to Scotland and lost, so there won't be any waving from me.
You'll just be waving goodbye to Scotland.
Bye. Whilst we're talking about players not playing in the shootout, which, you know, is everyone's choice, isn't it? No one's obliged to play in anything. That leads us on nicely to story of this week so far in the Scottish, with Ronnie pulling out. And I've seen lots of things written about this. I'm curious, like, you know, I'm trying to understand the sort of engage the temperature and opinion of the snooker fraternity, because I think there's quite a bit of misunderstanding here. No one's obliged to play in anything.
Yep.
And Ronnie, you know, obviously he and I don't see eye to eye on many things. That's everyone knows that. You know, in breaking news, the sun will rise tomorrow. But like, he's not obliged to play in anything. And he's well within the rules to withdraw from any event he wants to. The reasons he gives are, you know, that's a different subject. But he actually hasn't done anything wrong by the letter of the law from WST's point of view. So I'm confused where the narrative comes from. What's your opinion on it?
That's a bit of a strange one. I saw a few people were saying that during an interview at the UK's, he said he wouldn't be playing in Scotland. Now, if that's right and it was planned, then why leave it until... I think he withdrew like 2 or 3 days ago, actually. But it only came to light, I think, yesterday. But if he knew at the UK's, then why either not enter it, or sorry, why enter it in the first place and then withdraw, or why withdraw so late? I don't know, it seems a bit strange to me, but you're absolutely right in what you say. Players are not obliged to play in every tournament. It's optional. There's rules about what you can be doing while that tournament's on if you're not playing in it, but if he's not breaking those rules, then it's up to him, isn't it? It's up to him what he plays in. I mean, Henry had a tour card the other year. Oh, he's got a tour card now, but he had a tour card and played in hardly any events. And you know, there wasn't that much chatter about that then. So Ronnie's doing what Ronnie decides to do. That's up to him. I know Liam Graham was annoyed, who was due to play up in Scotland. And I get that. You know, he wants to play against Ronnie O'Sullivan. That's fair enough. And I think he was annoyed and upset. And I suspect maybe in a week or two's time, he's going to look back and think, I maybe shouldn't have said what I said. But some of the vitriol that you see on social media about it is, quite absurd, really.
Yeah, I think there is a small nuance difference between someone like Stephen Hendry, who has a tour card and chooses not to enter tournaments, versus somebody who enters the tournaments and then withdraws last minute. Those two things are slightly different. And if you look at it from the point of view of the first reserve in this case, who was former professional Anthony Davis's son, Alfie.
Yes.
He was first reserve. He got the call to go to Edinburgh. Something like 4 or 5 hours before, it was just completely undoable. If O'Sullivan knew he had no intention of going and withdrew last minute, that's not very good, because that obviously spoils the opportunity for young Mr. Davis. But I think you have no option in these cases to take the player at their word. And O'Sullivan has again cited health concerns. And I go back to what I said on the podcast a few episodes ago. Like, he's had it really bad, hasn't he, in recent times?
Yeah, he has, yeah.
He's been really poorly. He's been really ill. And to be that ill and pull out of that many events on medical grounds and then still turn up and win the UK Championships it's incredible, really. I mean, he's had it really, really bad. He pulled out of the British Open with something, I can't remember what that was, and then there was mental health grounds for another event. I think he had something called policeman's heel during the UK Championships. There was another medical reason thrown in there along the way. So tennis elbow as well. Like, he's had a real bad collection of illnesses in a very short space of time. Hopefully, he'll be okay.
As someone that is about 12 days younger than Ronnie O'Sullivan, I can tell you now, I've got all kinds of things wrong with me as well. I can sympathise with him. We're sort of hitting that age where things do go wrong and hurt and ache. And I could never dream of being a professional sportsman full stop. Certainly not at this age. I mean, it's hard work. You've had problems with your back and things like that in your time. And you're a couple of months younger than me and Ronnie, I think. So it's, I get it completely. I really do. It's one of those things. Just going back to the shootout, you mentioned Alfie there, I think. Mentioned Liam Graham as well. The young players at the shootout really shone, didn't they?
Oh, they did. They did. And it's starting to get a bit dangerous for me now, isn't it? Because there's obviously the lookalike-y with myself and Stan Moody. Then you've got Sean Liu, whose parents named him after me, his mother's favourite player. That's awkward.
All these...
I'm not related to anyone in the shootout. I'm just putting that out there.
All these mini Murphys knocking about there, Sean. That's
just me.
But I mean, seriously, Sean, we talked about you making history with the first 147 in the shootout. At 13 years of age, he became the youngest player ever to win a televised ranking event match. And people can bemoan, oh, it's only the shootout. 13 years old. 13 yeah. years old.
And what, were you, winning... what were you doing at 13?
Oh, I was probably still working on how to hop and wink and things like that.
I'm still trying to work out those things.
I certainly wasn't beating professional snooker players in televised tournaments. I mean, it was ridiculous. He was so good as well. But then you've also got the likes of Alfie. You've got Liam Davies. You've got Liam Pullen. You've got Stan. All these players coming through who, I mean, Liam Davies, home player in that. He's not quite yet on the tour. We've spoken about him many times on the podcast. And the confidence to say he was surrounded by not only his peers, but also family and friends and everything else, and got a great reception. And yeah, he reacted in the best possible way and just played some really, really good snooker.
Great to see. I think the biggest thing for me, it's not the sort of the technical aspect and the break building and the potting. It's the calmness and the composure that's on display.
It's mad.
Like, they just seem to have that beyond their years now, most of these young players. I don't understand it. It's incredible. It's like they've all been on some course.
Just talk about calmness. Jamie Clark, right? Now, Jamie Clark, local lad, he's from Clenethley, I think, just down the road from the venue. And it was packed with his family and friends. Every time he went on the stage to walk out, it was a huge roar. And he won, I think it was his second round match, and he came off. And I just held my fist out just to fist bump him, right? He punched my hand. Right? The adrenaline was going. He's like, bang! Punched. I was like, oh, no need. I thought, don't be doing that because you won't be able to play snooker if you keep smashing your hand up. But yeah, like you said.
Well, of course, that's why they call Michael Holt the Hitman, isn't it? That's where he gets his nickname from, because he banged the table one too many times and hurt himself.
Is that right?
Yeah, that's how he got his name. He smashed his hand on the table. I think he did break a couple of bones in his hand once.
I didn't know that.
Banged the table in frustration over something, and as we've all wanted to do from time to time, like there's no player who hasn't done that. And the table didn't hit him back, but didn't go anywhere as well. You know, these snooker tables are pretty solid.
I saw Mags hit one once, Stephen Maguire. I saw him hit a table once, and I was going to give the table a count of 10. I didn't think he was going to get back up.
Mac, you wouldn't want a right-hander off Max, that's for certain.
No, you certainly
But the only thing worse than a table punch is the non-table punch. Barry Hawkins did one yesterday in the Scottish Open, where he missed a sitter of a red. He went to hit the table and then didn't last minute. Like, that's even worse.
Oh, I pulled it.
If you're going to hit it, bloody hit it. Like, you know, don't give us the fake hit, Bazza.
No,
hit the table, Barry. Hit it.
Knowing what I'm like on the snooker table, I'd miss the red and miss the table as well.
Say on my recent form, but I missed the table.
We've got it. There's one thing we haven't talked about on the shootout. Do we mention the winner or not? Do we bother?
It's only fair, isn't it? It's only fair.
He was great, though, wasn't he? I mean, fair play to Mark Allen. We give him a lot of grief on this podcast, okay? Because we're friends with him, so we can do. But how brilliant was that? 10 years since he last reached the final, and he goes and wins it. And I've got to say, cool as a cucumber. One thing I would say, though, he took it very seriously. Like, very seriously. I mean, each pair of players get brought down to backstage during the match before theirs. And I noticed he was always down there, like, one match early. So he was always down there. There was a table just behind the set that those two players were practicing on. And he was always down one match early. And as soon as there was a gap on that table, he was playing. And I thought to myself, early on in the tournament, I thought, he's taking this very seriously. You know, and it showed.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, he's obviously trying to get to number one in the rankings. He was number one seed for that tournament and wore the shirt with the number one on it with pride. And I think with that goes a certain level of, you know, pride in performance as well. And you don't, you know, you're not there just to make the numbers up. You know, I can assure you, despite the shootout having that look of a bit of a party, we were all trying to win. To go there as number one seed, as the favourite, and to win it, it deserves all the more credit. And, so, I mean, like, in the final, you know, there was only one winner, wasn't there? I mean, Chow Yupeng, frankly, was awful in the final. It's possibly one of the worst final performances I've ever seen from anyone. He went in off twice, fouled another time, pissed the lad ball in hand three times. It was incredible. And I've never seen anything like it, frankly. But to that point, Mark had been the dominant player throughout the event. But Chow Yupeng, well, you know, he's had a checkered past, you know, that's another final that's gone begging for him.
Sao, not Chow. Sao Yupeng. Commentators always get that wrong, and I had some people actually compliment me on Twitter at the weekend on my pronunciation of Sao Yupeng.
I shall continue the commentator's curse and continue calling him Chow. just to spite you, Phil.
Charming. Thanks very much. Absolutely.
Sorry,
charming.
Do you mean Sarming?
Sarming, yes. Absolutely Sarming, yes. He is Sao Yupeng, seriously. That is his name, and everyone gets it wrong. And I think it's probably one of the first compliments I've ever had on Twitter, actually. Because normally it's just people having a go at me. But it was, genuinely, I was quite shocked. Quite shocked, but there you go.
Now, let's rewind the clock a little bit, because it's been very, very busy the last few weeks. You know, last time we did an episode of the pod, it was during the UK Championships, I think, or at the start of the UK. So there's been so much happening over the last few weeks. Not least of all, Ronnie O'Sullivan's record extending 8th UK Championship victory over Ding Junhui, you know, 10 days ago or whatever it was now. You know, an incredible achievement that, as I say, because everything's been so busy, we haven't even talked about.
Well, let's, before we talk about Ronnie, let's talk about Ding for a start. I mean, what is it about York and the UK Championships that, that brings him to life in the way it does? Because he played some stunning snooker, didn't he?
Maybe he should move to York.
Well, maybe he should.
You know, he lives in Sheffield. If something seems to happen to him when he goes to York, then I don't know if it's when he drives on the A64 and he passes that little chef and the BP garage and he's on the, you know, goes past the race course and he gets into York City Wall, something changes. He becomes like some kind of Marvel superhero. I don't know.
I do wonder what it is. I wonder if it's to do with support, you know. Here in the greatest city on earth, we have there's a very big Chinese community up at the university. There's a lot of Chinese students there. And I know a lot of them do go to the snooker when it's at the Barbican. So Ding gets a lot of support here. And I wonder if some of it's to do with that.
Yeah, I think that possibly has a bearing on it. I mean, it's a mad. I was obviously there. You know, I lost to Hussein round one. But I was there, obviously, with my BBC hat on for the rest of the week. And in and out of stage door two or three times a day. And whenever Ding was playing, there was a massive contingent of Chinese fans at stage door waiting for autographs and pictures. In fact, I said to one of the BBC producers who was there one night, one of Ding's matches had finished late, and there must have been 150 Chinese students at stage door.
Wow, as many as that, really?
Yeah, and I said to the producers, this is actually a snapshot of what it's like in China at every event every day for us all. And she, you know, they were like, "Oh goodness me!" You know, you can see because they've never seen it. You know, and it was mad. So Ding, yeah, maybe almost, you know, has that support, feels a lot more supported there because of that. That you could very well be onto something. Of course, the other time we ran in and out of stage door at the way back at the start of the UK Championships was the fire alarm. That's something that was no one saw that coming. And we were rushed out of stage door. I've never seen security Mark Williams move so fast in all my life and all my days of knowing him. He rushed us out the back. We were escorted over to the Edinburgh Arms where we were welcomed. I think for a time being, we thought the night of snooker might be over. But we were ushered back in soon enough and play resumed.
Well, I was in a hotel room somewhere. I think it was in Cardiff, actually. And I messaged you. Because I'm watching this sort of blank screen on the BBC red button, and it's like the snooker will begin shortly. I'm thinking, well, it should have begun 20 minutes ago. So I messaged you, and I'm like, what's going on? And you messaged me, I put fire alarm in the venue. We're all in the pub over the road. I thought, wow.
That's pretty special. Typical snooker players in the pub. Nobody bought a drink. Nobody's wallet was seen. It was like going out with you.
Oh, wow. So rude. So rude. So cheeky.
Incredible.
Ronnie O'Sullivan, UK Championship. I mean, that's pretty amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, incredible. I mean, I think halfway through the tournament, it coincided with the exact date that Ronnie won that event 30 years ago. And you know, I remember watching that as a kid. You know, as a child, as a 10, 11 year old child, dreaming of becoming a snooker player, watching this young man who just turned pro, you know, was 7 or 8 years ahead of me on the journey, beating Stephen Hendry in the final of the UK Championship. And just, you know, it was an inspirational moment because you just think, wow, you know, it's somebody who's young, it can be done. And for that same person to still be at the top of the game, I'm sure he would say differently to this, but, you know, arguably playing as well as he's ever played, you know, is phenomenal. You know, in isolation, his ability to play snooker to such a high level is incredible, really.
Yeah. It's ridiculous. Now, just to put that into perspective, okay, 30 years ago, now that alone sounds like a very long time. It is a very long time, okay? So 30 years ago, he won the UKs. He's just won the UKs. Sean Liu, named after you, who won a match at the shootout, televised ranking event match. He was born 17 years after Ronnie won that UKs. 17 years after he won that first UK championship. And now he's won a professional match in a televised match. ridiculous. Just ridiculous.
Bonkers.
Yeah.
Absolutely bonkers.
Yeah, it's completely nuts. So hats off to Ronnie O'Sullivan. That's all we can say, really. I mean, we keep saying it, but he is the greatest. Enjoy him while he's here. Yes, he doesn't play every event, but he's the greatest to have ever picked up a cue. Just stop moaning about him and just enjoy him while he's here, because he's something to behold. He really is. Now, we affected the coverage of the UK Championships, didn't we?
Did we?
Yes, we did. People that listen to the podcast regularly will remember our episode with Rick Witter, the lead singer from Shed 7.
Oh, yeah.
Lo and behold, what did the BBC do, Sean?
They got Rick Witter in to do the titles for the opening of the final day. That's right.
Yeah, they got Shed 7 down. They filmed a special promo with them, with Ronnie, with Ding, using the Shed's new single, Talk of the Town. And it,
great single, by the way.
Great single, yeah. Began and ended the BBC's coverage, which was fantastic. And I saw you interviewing Rick on the BBC as well, which was great.
Yeah, that was good fun. It was quite a funny story, actually, because throughout the week, I mean, it was fairly common knowledge. A lot of the BBC crew and Eurosport crew were dropping like flies. I mean, everyone was so ill during the UK coverage. So they had a few of us doing roles that, you know, aren't really our roles. So, you know, keen-eyed viewers of the BBC coverage will have seen yours truly presenting the highlights on the Friday night. You know, that's not something I've ever done before, presenting a show on my own. So that was like a real thrill, and I loved doing that. And then during the final, because they're so short on sort of staff, with everyone being so poorly, they asked me to do an interview with Rick Witter during the interval. And of course, like, you know, we've all been watching telly all our lives. You don't think anything of it until the director gives you the cue and goes, right, 3, 2, 1, right, go. And you're right, it's on me, you know, because you could say anything at that point. And it was funny, because I walked in to do the interview with Rick, and I was ready to do a live interview. And they said, oh, no, we're going to pre-record it. And, you know, because they're just gently easing you into the family, like, you know.
Also, you cannot trust rock stars not to swear when being interviewed. Let's be honest.
I suppose that could be it. Yeah, that could be it. So we did the pre-record, and something went wrong in the last dying seconds of the pre-record. I think maybe a button was pushed in one of the trucks. Anyway, the footage was deleted. It went missing, something like that. So they quickly scrambled. I've got the earpiece with the director in, saying, we're actually going to have to come to you live, so just stand by 20 seconds, we'll be with you. Hazel's going to throw to you live.
Oh, wow. So it actually was done live?
It actually was done live, yeah. So things got very real all of a sudden.
Wow. And you got a plug for the podcasting, Sean. Well done.
Thank you very
much. Great work, Agent Murphy. Well done. That's good. Get on the BBC.
No, well, I've done the same. I was on there following the shootout, 147. I was on 5 Live. Nice. Got a plug in there for the podcast, and then I was on Talk Sport with Andy Goldstein, and got the plug in for the thing there. So, listen, it's all good. It's all good news for the podcast.
Fantastic. Well done, Agent Murphy. Fantastic. Well, it was great to see Shed 7 getting used. Like you said, that song is an absolute banger as well. Talk of the Town, great song. Great to see them there, and nice to know that the podcast influences things ever so slightly, which is
absolutely
always good.
Absolutely, as it should be, Philip.
Yes, definitely. Now, let's bring it right up to date. So, Scottish Open has now begun. I will be there from Friday on quarterfinals onwards. As you've already mentioned, sadly, you went out to Liu Hongyu yesterday. There's been a bit of controversy, though, with the reigning and defending champion, Gary Wilson, playing his best mate, Elliot Slesser, a friend of both of ours. And Elliot called him for a push shot, which Gary denied. And it's doing the rounds. The video's doing the rounds on social media. Have you seen it? Have you had a look?
Seen it, yeah. Have you seen it?
I have.
What do you think?
I don't think you can tell from the video, personally. And I know Gary well enough to say he would have called himself. He'd have called on himself, especially playing Sless. Because they are good mates, and I genuinely do think he would have called himself. Go on, you're putting a face at me, Sean. What do you think?
I agree with you. I think it's very hard to tell from the video. I thought it sounded like a bit of a shove.
Yeah.
But I didn't think the cue ball reacted
as
if it had been pushed. And I've known Gary all my life. You know, we've all got a secret Santa list of players we think could be a bit suspect here or there. You know, we've all got one of those secret lists. Gary Wilson isn't on anyone's list. I think Gary Wilson's integrity is up there with the best. I'm pretty sure if Gary Wilson felt that he'd hit that cue ball twice, he would have been the first to own up to it. So I think we give the player the benefit of the doubt. It did sound funny. You know, only he would know.
Yeah.
And I trust Gary Wilson enough to know that, you know, he would have done the right thing.
Yeah, I think Gary would have called it personally. Like I say, especially against Elliot as well, because they are good, really good mates. And I would be stunned if he didn't. So some big names have gone out, though. And
yeah,
obviously, Ronnie's not playing. You've gone out. Mark Williams went out to Sam Craig. Was he 3-0 up in that as well?
3-0 up, but I mean, you know, I mean, we were sat watching it in the players' lounge because I was following the match adjacent to that, so we sort of had a good view of that. Like, I mean, Sam Craigie could have won that much 4-0. He found himself 3-0 behind. He should have won all those first three frames as well.
Yeah, crazy.
He was all over Mark like a cheap suit, and it was, you know, in the end, like even at 3-1, it looked like there was only ever going to be one winner, and he ran out the winner. It was an incredible match, like ridiculous. You know, Mark Allen, you know, just won the shootout, came up there, lost to Jamie Jones. You know, yeah. it's not easy to get back on the bike and keep going.
Do you know what?
I lost to Lu Hong Hu again. He beat me in the English Open in Brentwood. You know, just having a bit of a problem with that player. I don't know why, but yeah, it's not easy.
It's really funny, you know, going into the shootout, I think Mark and Jamie Jones were next to each other in the rankings, and had neither of them had a run at the shootout, that match, I think, would have decided who gets in the World Grand Prix, because the cutoff is this week. And
right.
Yeah, it potentially was going to be a huge match, irrelevant now, because Mark went and won the shootout, but had he gone out second or third round or fourth round in the shootout, that match, they would have been next to each other in the rankings, and whoever won that would probably, I think, have gone on to the World Grand Prix. But yeah, the context of that would have been enormous, wouldn't it? Had Mark not won the shootout, I mean, that would have been huge.
Yeah, I'm not really a follower of where all these cutoffs and things are for these various events, certainly until we get to the Players' Champs. I didn't actually realise the cutoff for the Grand Prix was this week. But yeah, that would have been a big game, you know, as you say. But I, you know, it was funny because, you know, I got to the venue Sunday afternoon. Mark Allen had just won the shootout Saturday evening, and the first person I saw in the practice room when I got there was Mark Allen.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me at all. The attitude he was showing down there.
All credit to him.
Yeah, yeah. That's the same attitude he had down in Swansea. You know, he was just focused and practice, and yeah, really, really on it. So it was great, really. Another one that's sort of pushing it in the World Grand Prix in the rankings is the world champion, Luca Brasel. Really struggling on the 1-year list. He did well in, what was the invitational over in China? Was it the Shanghai Masters?
Shanghai, got to the final of Shanghai. Invitational. Absolutely nothing apart from that.
Not a ranking event, so it doesn't count. And yeah, he's really struggling at the moment. So it'll be interesting to see what he gets up to, really. But yeah, so Scottish
Open. It's a really difficult one. It's a really difficult one, you know, as a first-time world champion. You know, of course, you know, I won it in 05 and I've only ever won it once. But I do feel like I can sort of speak, you know, with some experience on the matter. Like, it's so easy to get pulled from pillar to post. When you know, as world champion, you're asked to do a lot of stuff that goes unseen. You do a lot of media work for WST, for the tour, for sponsors, for your own sponsors. There's a lot of charity events. You know, he's quite busy in Belgium in his hometown. He'd be, you know, he's doing with local councils and stuff. You know, you really feel like it's time to give back. Obviously, he's been on 25 holidays since winning the world championship. They're
is
not
that
easy to fit in either. He's become Belgium's most salubrious car dealer, apparently, in the last 2 months. But in all seriousness, it's very, very difficult to just be serious for a minute. It is very difficult to retain that laser-like focus that got you there in the first place. And you're so keen to be a good pro, to be a good world champion, to put something back, to enjoy it, to not miss out on these opportunities, that it's very easy to take your eye off the ball. And before you know it, you're struggling for victories, which is where he is now.
Yeah, but he will come back because he's too good not to. So I'm sure he will. Okay, so Scottish Open this week. I'm there from Friday through to Sunday. If you're there, as I always say, come and say hello. It's live on Eurosport Discovery Plus all week. I think you can see pretty much every single ball struck on Discovery Plus, which is brilliant. Right, time for us to take a short break, after which Sean will have his rant.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you like what you're listening to, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and be sure to interact with us across all forms of social media at 147pod. That's the words at 147pod.
And please do. And we've had loads of interaction recently, which has been brilliant. And we've got lots of listener questions coming up very shortly. But first, Mr. Murphy, have you got a rant for me today?
Oh, I've got a rant for you. Don't worry about that.
Wonderful. Well, just let me get my stopwatch ready because I need to time it, because otherwise it's not a rant, is it? Let's be honest. The stopwatch is ready. You will have 1 minute and 47 seconds from the moment I say rant to the sound of the klaxon. The magician, are you ready?
Ready.
3, 2, 1, rant.
Well, I'm going to officially start this rant with an apology because I may have ranted about this before, and if I have, apologies. But if that's the case, that only serves as to prove my point. It's such a good rant that it has to be repeated. Shrinkflation. The size of Quality Street tins. What is going on? You buy one of these tins, they're half the size of what they used to be. This is a festive-based rant, obviously. You go to buy your celebrations, your Quality Street, your roses. There's hardly anything in there. What is going on? We used to buy one of those things when I was a kid in the 80s. It'd last you months, and then you could use the tin to put things in. Like, you couldn't put anything in those tins now, and they last the sitting. You have a cup of tea, half the packet's gone. It's ridiculous. And that leads me on to the second point. These absolute cretins, dregs of society, should be on a watch list somewhere. These people who have something out of a Quality Street tin, unwrap it and put the wrapper back in the tin. You dirty, dirty, filthy people. What is wrong with you? You're a disgrace to society, to humanity as a wider challenge. We are sick of you. Stop putting your empty wrappers back in these small miniature tins that are getting smaller by the year. It is ridiculous. Absolutely sick of it. Every time I go into these tins, what do I find? I don't find a nice selection of my favourite little toffee crunches or my orange creams. I find your empty wrappers. Put them in the bin like a normal person. Stop ruining my enjoyment of these tins of sweets.
Okay. Phil. Let's let's approach a couple of things here. The fact that me and you would sit down with a tin of Quality Street and it'd be gone in one sitting, that probably says more about me and you than it does about Quality Street, if I'm honest.
That's a separate issue.
You're right. I'm not going to argue with you on either point. The empty wrapper thing, we've talked about that before. That annoys me. The smaller tins. Who was I talking to the other day? Oh, I was giving Yorkie bars out to the crowd in Swansea. Okay, because I'm from York, of course.
Shock.
Now, Yorkie bars, the same thing, shrinkflation. How small are Yorkie bars now? Right? Do you remember king-size Yorkies, the proper ones? The original, not the Yorkie duo. Don't give me that. The proper king-size Yorkies, the ones that you could kill a man with, right? They were massive. They were you drop one of those on your foot, you had a broken toe, okay? They were huge. Now, Yorkie bars, they're like one bites. They really are. They're nothing to them. And you're right, Quality Street tins, well, Well, they're not tins anymore anyway. They're the plastic now, aren't they? And they're just getting so small. It's pathetic.
I think it's high time that Sky News' Beth Rigby gets involved in this type of thing, because there's this COVID inquiry that's going on at the moment. You've got all the dignitaries and all the top dogs in the political environments. They're all being inquired about and interviewed to within an nth degree. They should be put on the spot over these things. These are the matters that really count.
Yep. Yeah, of course they should. They're massive, and it's what annoys people.
Forget your WhatsApp messages through the COVID inquiry. We want to know what's happening to our tins of sweets, Phil. Right? What's going on? These are the things that count. These are the things that really matter.
So shrinkflation is a thing. Okay, shrinkflation is a massive thing. What part of shrinkflation annoys you the most? With me, it's Yorkie Bars. With Sean, it's tins of Quality Street. What's yours? Let us know at 147pod. What part of shrinkflation really gets your goat?
Oh, I might have to go for a lie down now.
Well, let's not. Let's do some listener questions instead, shall we, Sean? I shall begin with Paul Stevens on Facebook says, in Q-Zone, now when he talks about Q-Zone, for those people that don't go to live events, we have a Q-Zone where we have WPBSA coaches. There's normally one star table and then some mini tables, depending how much space there is. I think this week there was two or three mini tables and a star table as well. In Q-Zone, they have two reds over each pocket. What's your record in shots for potting all 12? Now, I don't think I've actually done that challenge. I've done the one where they put one red over each pocket, and the least I've done that in is three shots, which I was over the moon with, by the way. I did that in, I think it was in Northern Ireland at the Northern Ireland Open this year. So have you had a go at that one, Sean?
I've done the one with the one red over each pocket. I've done that before. We used to do that as a game we played in the club on a Saturday afternoon as kids. We used to do that for a bit of a laugh.
Okay.
Back in the days playing at Rawn's Q Sports when I was just a little child, we used to do that on a load of other little games and stuff as well we used to play.
I believe that the Q Zone record for that is actually two shots.
Yeah, two is my record. I've done it in two shots.
Wow. That seems...
You start with the cue ball somewhere on the brown spot, near the brown spot, and you pop one of the reds over the middle pocket, and in the same shot, the cue ball smacks down the cushion into one of the reds over a corner pocket. And if you catch that red correctly, there's topspin on the cue ball, and you hit that red, and it arcs around the black spot and pops the other red over the other corner.
Wow, that's mad. I was impressed with my three. I've got to say, I was delighted with that, but yeah, I couldn't imagine doing it in two. That's mad. So yeah, I've not done that one. One thing I have done.
No, I haven't done the one with two over each pocket. No, I've not done that. No.
I remember in Cheltenham a few years ago, I think it was a World Grand Prix we did there, and every day we've been going into Q Zone playing with the coach in there, and they've been doing a 60-second challenge where pack of reds on the table, no other balls, pack of reds. You split the pack, and then the clock starts on your next shot after the break, and you've got to pot as many reds as you can in 60 seconds. Now, all week I'd been appalling. I'd been absolutely atrocious. I literally could not hit a barn door with a banjo. I was dreadful. And on the final day, they had like VIP guests up in a lounge, and they asked me to go up, speak to them, do the instruction and all this. And there was a table up there with a coach, with Andrew. And I did the instruction and everything else. And then Andrew said, oh, and Phil's going to have a go at the 60-second challenge. And I'm like, oh, no, Andrew, no. I've been awful all week. And these people, they're like paying guests. No, I can't do it. But I've got to now because he said I'm doing it. I was like, oh, God. I did it. I think I got seven. I did the best I've ever done. 60 seconds, seven reds, absolutely smashed it. I couldn't. He stood there looking at me because he's seen me in Q Zone being dreadful all week. And he's like, where's that come from? I said, I don't know, but I'm taking it.
You're good in front of a crowd, though, aren't you? You know, when that runner hands you the mic backstage and you walk out, you're like, good morning, welcome to the.
Yeah, and then they turn it on afterwards.
Yeah, cheers. That story reminds me of another funny story, funnily enough. First time I ever went on Junior Big Break.
Was that 1972?
74, 75. No. lovers of snooker, of course, will remember Big Break.
Yeah, yeah.
On the primetime slot, BBC One on a Saturday night. Incredible to think, looking back, that snooker had its own game show, isn't it, on a Saturday night primetime. But somewhere during the mid-90s, they actually started doing a junior version with like up-and-coming players. Myself was on it, Maguire, Selby, Luke Fisher, Lee Spick, Tom Ford. You know, over years, we all sort of had a go at it. And I remember going down for the recording of my show down to the Television Centre in London. dead excited into makeup. Then we had the rehearsal, and I won the rehearsal. I think I got 7 or 8 out of 10 on the pop, you know, on the quick fire ads. You know, won a load of money for the guest and got the special prize. Of course, it was the rehearsal. And then it came to filming it in front of the live audience there. Right, we're going for the take now. 3, 2, 1, take. Jim Davidson comes on and we have the chats and John Virgo pulled your name out the hat and you go out, meet your partner. It was my turn to go first. I got 7 in rehearsal. In real life, I got 2. Went out first.
Did you have someone in the crowd going, "Don't bottle it now, Sean"?
Don't bottle it now. Yeah, it was my mum. She hasn't been since.
Fantastic. Absolutely brilliant. There you go. So, yeah, that's not done that one, but we have done other ones. So
not done that one. Right, Chrissy Oldwood on Facebook. I know Chrissy well. She's one of our top coaches. She says old school and rural snooker clubs don't really support growing the game and encouraging younger players. What more can be done to help coaches, etc., grow the game and get the backing of clubs to use coaches more to this end? Now, that's a great question.
Yeah, I cut that question down a little bit. Chrissy, love you to bits, but that the original question was it took about 3 days for me to read. Chrissy actually, I think, has just become the coach at, is it the club in Leicester? Is it the Winchester?
Just become resident coach at the Winchester, which is in Leicester, brilliant ran to by see. A great friend of mine. Yeah,
brilliant to see. Fantastic to see, is that? And that really is great. But Sean, she's got a very good point there, isn't she?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's something that's not necessarily unique to, you know, old school and rural clubs. But of course, you know, when you compare your traditional club to, you know, these state of the art academies that are popping up, you know, around the country and around the world, they're obviously very, very different places, built for completely different purposes. I always think anywhere that's ran by a committee, generally of old, middle-aged white men. You know, I think you're onto a bit of a hide into nothing. It's very hard to get anything through these committees, isn't it? And these, you know, Malcolm's been president for 50 years. He wears his club tie with pride and likes his cheese and onion sandwich cut the same way. You know, these clubs are very, very difficult to get anything past. And they don't really tend to support kids coming in and coaches even and stuff like that. Very hard to know what the right thing to do is in those places. I think, like Chrissy's done, you know, you've got to work hard and find clubs that are receptive. The Winchester, for instance, in Leicester, is ran by a former tour pro.
Yep.
He was the pro in the club that I grew up playing in Rawns Q Sports, Mukesh Palmer. And so when you find a club that's ran by someone with snooker running in their veins, you find that these places tend to be a little bit more forward-thinking and open to change. So, well, I'm certainly not suggesting we turn our backs on traditional clubs run by committees, but they're traditionally not the place where you will find help to go forward.
I've got a couple of thoughts on this. Firstly, Swansea at the weekend, the amount of children and young people in the crowd in Swansea was absolutely brilliant to see. Whether it's because it's a shootout and it attracts a different demographic, I don't know. Whether it's snooker is a bigger sport in South Wales with the younger generation, I don't know. I'm not sure. But there was a lot of young people in the crowd. And I'm talking right down to toddlers, some of them, which was, it was brilliant to see. And it was great to see so many of them in Q Zone when I did pop out there when I got a spare 3 seconds to nip out to Q Zone. It was fantastic. I think, personally, this might sound mad, this, but I think the Olympics is a huge, huge part in this. If snooker can become an Olympic sport, it will then qualify for a whole world of funding, which it doesn't currently. And I think that's one of the reasons why Jason Ferguson, WPBSA, have been pushing for so many years, and I know you were involved as well, I think, over in Paris, to try and get snooker to the Olympics. Once it becomes an Olympic sport, then it unlocks a whole world of funding that it doesn't currently get. That funding then could trickle down and pay for coaches, because I do think a lot of it is financial. I think a lot of these clubs and different organisations, they probably can't afford to pay coaches to go in and coach. And if it's chicken and egg, if you've got a coach in there, then I think younger people would want to go there and play, and the parents would pay for lessons and table time and that kind of thing. But if there isn't a coach there, they're not going to go there in the first place. So I think it needs that. I think the sport, and it's a sport, not a game, by the way, which I think is crucial when it comes to the Olympics. I think the sport needs that injection of funding to pay for the coaches to, you know, get rid of the chicken and egg to actually get things rolling. But that's my thoughts. I mean, you've probably got a more informed view on that, Sean.
I have quite a deep involvement in the coaching side of the game and with the WPBSA coaching scheme and all of that. But, I think the funding's a massive one. I mean, if you compare us to, let's say, golf, for instance, just the way it's set up, most golf clubs have a club pro.
Yep.
That club pro, to earn their right to be a club pro, have to have taken certain exams, and they have to pass an exam on how to run a business and, you know, how to run that pro shop. They have to be able to do club repairs, and they have to be able to coach to a particular level. No such requirement is made of people in snooker clubs. And when you walk into a snooker club, if it's lucky enough to have a pro, all that means is that person has played on the pro tour at some stage. They're not necessarily qualified to coach or to spend time with you or to show, you know, they don't have a qualification against their name. And there's no requirement for that to happen. Now, that may change.
Yep.
Because the WPBSA recently brought out their 147 kite marking scheme for clubs, and that's been widely taken up by a lot of clubs across the country. And as that grows, I think you'll see it expanding. WPBSA coaches continues to expand at a rate of knots, and we're currently working on the new advanced level 3 courses to upgrade coaches from 1 to 2 to level 3s. That's taking place as we speak. You briefly mentioned him in a previous answer, but Coach Andrew Highfield recently became the first top level 3 advanced coach in the world, and continues to go from strength to strength. So it's all, you know, all rolled into one. It's not as straightforward as just one thing, but, you know, it is moving in the right direction. And of course, people don't realise, you know, we're a sport with zero funding.
Yep.
Zero. And to be doing as well as we do with that is frankly incredible. But it always feels as if, you know, the powers that be on high, you know, whoever makes these decisions from the government, we have a parliamentary panel, you know, batting on our behalf. But, you know, I don't know that we get very far. Snooker's always seen, I think, as the black sheep, really, of the sporting community. And, of course, that's been demonstrated again this week by, you know, O'Sullivan's absence in the Sports Personality of the Year nominations. It's just incredible, really.
Yeah, it is. And I think Mary mentioned it on Twitter today. I'm getting some stick, actually. Mary Earps is the 1-12, so 12-1 on favourite to win that. She's the goalkeeper for the Lionesses. Big fan of the Lionesses. Massive fan of the Lionesses. I question what she's done to deserve to win that award, and she's clearly going to win it because the bookies don't get it that wrong. But for Ronnie to not even be shortlisted when at 47 years old won the UK Championship astounds me. Absolutely astounds me. But let's not get deep into that one. But you know what? Because she wrote in a question and because she's a friend of ours, let's just give her one last plug. Chrissy Allwood, now professional at the Winchester Club in Leicester. Is that right, Sean?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Winchester Club in Leicester. If you are in the Leicester area, you want coaching or anything else, get yourself down there. Give them a message. Get on to them on Facebook. Chrissy's great. She's wonderful. And, you know, people saying snooker clubs aren't a welcoming place for a woman, for young people, whatever. Ignore all of that. It's not right. There's Chrissy there. She will coach you down the Winchester Club, so get yourself down there. Okay, Mark Rayburn on Facebook. This is a big one for me. With Ronnie hinting he may retire if he can't play when and where he wants, what are the chances of a breakaway or split tour in the coming years?
Big question, that.
It is, especially this week as John Rahm joined LIV Golf for, how much was it again? It was a few quid.
I think it was $600
million. $600 million. Wow.
I wouldn't get out of bed for that, would you?
I would never go to bed if I had that kind of money. I don't know what you're talking about. That's ridiculous, isn't it?
Incredible. But
realistically, I know shots have been fired between, I think, Ronnie and Barry Hearn particularly over this. And it extends back to the Macau 5 and all that going on. Do you think there's any legs in this or not?
Well, I think you have to take it with a slight pinch of salt. Ronnie's been hinting he might retire for 30 years.
So, that's true, actually.
You know, there is nothing new in that. Anyone playing snooker bingo, looking for the Ronnie, I'm going to retire quote, can tick that one off now.
Yep.
But yeah, this thing isn't going to go away. The sort of serious battle between the players and the WPBSA players body that represents them, and WST with their players contract, this isn't going anywhere. This is only going to increase in velocity and in seriousness, because these two parties are going to clash over this. I'm not sure which way it's going to go. Big week this week in snooker politically. We've got the AGM of the WPBSA and the elections to the WPBSA Players Board. Such is the interest in this. Normally, you have to crowbar players into these meetings and nominations. There are three spots available on the players' board, and there are seven candidates. It's the first time in history that there's more candidates than spaces. So that meeting is tomorrow. Depending on who gets through the candidacy and the nomination process, if certain members find their way onto that board, that could cause WST a headache going forward, because I know a few of the players who've put themselves forward have this as one of their key factors to run with. This is one of their key mandates to try and get a fairer, better deal out of WST. We want a review of the contract. We want it looked at. We want to sit down and talk. It's going to be interesting. Tomorrow's a big day in answering that question.
Wow. Is it secretive, or can you tell us who is up for that or not?
Yeah, do you know what? I wouldn't be sure. I'd be wary of saying too much just the day before. You know, I think it's fairly private.
Okay.
Who gets through and all the rest of it will be made public. In the afternoon following the results of the AGM, absolutely no question. But Ronnie chooses his own words pretty carefully. I think in his quote he said that if WST. He said something like, if they don't let him play when he needs to, he was very careful not to say when he wanted to. He said when he needs to. Not sure what that means. But if he's looking for a sort of wipe the slate clean, play whenever you want, play wherever you want, I'm not sure he's going to get that. Whether I think he should or not is a separate issue. I mean, the WST players contract is akin to an employment contract. It's very, of course, we're not employees. Mm. And therein lies the rub. We're self-employed, consultants or tradespeople or whatever you want to say. But we're sort of told what we can and can't do. It's harsh. And to some degree, they've got us over a barrel. As I say, the results of tomorrow's vote are going to dictate how hard the players negotiate this very point and others.
Yeah, that's a big day tomorrow then. So, sorry, just for anyone listening, we are recording this on Tuesday. Okay, so whenever you listen to this, the AGM is Wednesday. It's tomorrow as we're recording this, and doubtless the results of that will come out at some point. Look, we've got some more listener questions, but we're going to hold them over. We are going to do a Christmas special, aren't we, Sean?
We are.
We're going
absolutely
to do a festive special that will be with you before Christmas.
Will you be wearing that hat and glasses that you were wearing at the shootout?
Well, I don't know what you're talking about. Whatever are you referring to, Sean?
We all saw the pictures.
What happens at the shootout stays at the shootout, Sean. You know that as well as I do.
We all saw those pictures.
Listen, when someone from the crowd that goes to the shootout every single year, as they do, gives you a Santa hat and sunglasses, you are kind of obliged to wear them on live television, the same way Kyron Wilson is obliged to wear whatever kind of glove he wants to wear for any kind of match he's playing in. Simple as. Right. Any more questions you've got for us, get them in. We'll try and get them in on the Christmas special at 147pod across all forms of social media. We have still got a few. Nathan Woodward, Niall Greenfield, Liam McMullen, Rodri Morgan. I promise we'll get those on there, okay? But for now, we've actually got a slightly Christmassy pointless question this week to wrap the podcast up, Sean. So here we go. Would you rather have Christmas every day or never at all?
Never at all.
Oh, you big old Grinch. What?
I like Christmas, but I couldn't have it every day. Could you?
I love Christmas. I'd rather have it every day than never at all. I couldn't not have Christmas.
Yeah, I'd rather not have it.
Well, you absolute Scrooge.
What's it about, like? I mean, what's it about?
We're going to get deep in this because I'm going to a nativity
play
shortly. Well,
no, because it's just ridiculous, isn't it? It's just a ridiculous story. I mean, I used to be very religious, as everyone knows. I used to fall right down that rabbit hole. But what's it about?
For me,
the three wise men going to a barn following a star. Are you winding me up?
What even is myrrh? What's myrrh? No one knows.
What is frankincense? No one knows what it is.
Just give us the gold. We're all happy. So
immaculate conception, my ass.
What would? Sorry, just for those people now that accuse Sean of being religious, I think that's gone right out the window with that statement. What would you do?
Imagine Mary going home to her husband saying, listen, Joe, I've got something to tell you. What happened was he'd be out in a second. He wouldn't be anywhere near. Goodness, what a story that is.
Wow. I thought you'd had your rant, but now you're going in on Mary.
Why do we bring trees into our house and put lights and tinsel? What is that about?
You absolute Scrooge. What would you do? I would have Christmas every day. Rather than not at all.
Do you know people like you are the problem with the world?
That's not the first time you've said that, Sean, either.
Ridiculous world we live in. Let's cut this tree down and put it in the lounge. What? Do you think aliens have been to this planet and looked at us and gone, they're doing this lot, they're just not ready for us? No, hold first contact, put it back, they're not ready for us.
This really bodes well for a Christmas special next week, Sean, doesn't it?
Can't wait. I'll bring the frankincense and myrrh. What are you going to bring?
Bailey's. That's what I'll bring. It'll be the 147 podcast Christmas special brought to you in association with Bailey's.
Bring the port and the gout tablets.
Happy days. Sean, at that note, I shall say goodbye.
Whatever.
Thank you for listening. Get in touch with us at 147 Pod. Christmas special coming next week. Enjoy the Scottish Open this week. Yeah, thanks for that wave, Sean. Thank you very much. Thank you for listening. A goodbye from me, Sean.
Yeah. Take care, everybody. Enjoy your Christmas trees.
That was the 147 podcast with Sean Murphy and Phil Seymour. If you enjoyed what you've just listened to, make sure you subscribe, leave us a review, and interact with us across all forms of social media at 147 Pod. That's all words at 147 Pod. Thanks for listening.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Welcome back to Two Judgy Girls. I'm Mary from the Bay.
And I'm Courtney from LA. TJG is the podcast where we spill all the tea on your favorite reality TV shows, celebrity gossip, and everything in between. We're here to bring you our unfiltered opinions, hilarious commentary, and plenty of laughs along the way.
We're two SDSU Delta Gamma sisters with a microphone and a whole lot of opinions. Each week, we dive headfirst into the wild world of reality television,
From Bravo to all the trash TV you could want. We break down the drama, dissect the latest scandals, and share our thoughts on everything from the jaw-dropping moments to the embarrassing antics.
But that's not all. We're not here to just gossip. We're here to connect with you, the jurors, and share our love of all things pop culture. Whether we're dishing on the latest celebrity breakups, discussing our favorite guilty pleasure movies, or sharing embarrassing stories from our own lives, we promise to keep it real, keep it fun, and keep you coming back for more.
Come judge with us.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.